hard to see us benefit.
Thank you, Ben. When John and I have known each other for a long time, a lot of connections, and when we discussed this last night, why I suggested that he give his speech first. It was then sort of the natural deference of here am I, a former Western farm boy with the president of a small new college, and here's John, an Ivy League alumnus with a president of a college that's, what, 100 years old? And so it was just natural deference. But now that I've heard his speech, I can see there was more sense than that to it, because he really gave a speech, and I'm just going to have a few rambling remarks, which, by, although they don't sound so initially, are really in pretty large agreement with what he had to say. I think I ought to begin by saying that most audiences, most people, expect too much of college administrators. I constantly, I both read my mail and I meet trustees and alumni and businessmen. There's always the question of why don't you jelly-bellied college administrators take a stand? And I want to explain the reason why a good many college administrators don't. Then I want to go on and say some of the things that they should do. And it's fairly obvious I will be agreeing with John more in the latter part of the talk than in the former. If you look at the college administrator's difficulties, the first thing I think you have to face is that he is beset by having to deal with an unusually independent and at times irresponsible staff, which is called faculty. I know of no other field of endeavor at which a man can get to the top purely on his own efforts with such a limited amount of administrative responsibility as in the academic world. People have to grow up in the, they go to work in a business firm or in the military or in any one of several other walks of life, because they get more responsibilities thrown at them from stage to stage, from section head to division head and to assistant vice president and so on. But in the academic world, this isn't true. As we all know, the young instructor may be carrying just as much responsibility as the full professor is. And as a result of this, this constant emphasis on the individual effort, you do get frequently a kind of an irresponsible type in the academic world. Now, this isn't to say that there aren't many highly responsible and able people on college faculties, but it's rather to say that this is a situation which irresponsible people can get to the top. And remember, the administrator has to deal with his whole staff. Administrators have other problems. As John and I know, the private college administrator has a definite responsibility for the finance of his institution, as well as for the harmonious relations of his faculty and students. It's very easy to say, throw the thing back on the Board of Trustees, but supposing the Board of Trustees doesn't do it, supposing they just resign, as they could, you're still the person to whom the faculty looks for its salary increases, the students look for the things they'd like to see money spent on, and really do have to be the person who holds it together fiscally. I think the result of these difficulties is that we frequently expect too much. I was with John at the meeting of the Association of American Colleges, where we both voted against this Declaration of Student Rights, and I think it was a mistake. And as a matter of fact, had it come up 1 year later, I don't think it would possibly have carried, but it got through just before the disruptions hit us. At the same time, as I go to that Association of American Colleges and look around, I think these are, by and large, pretty responsible people. They're pretty easy people to talk to. They are trying to do something with their institutions. They're at least, I think you'll grant me this, they're at least well ahead of their professors in general responsibility to the environment. Point I'm trying to get at maybe is that academic administrators are to some extent have to be products of the value standards around them. I too served in World War II, and I came out with the general thesis, amongst others, that no general can get too far ahead of his army. without difficulty. And I don't know that college presidents can get too far ahead of their college. I do agree with John, they have to be leaders, but I think sometimes we're expecting more or less impossible results from them. One of the things that we have prided ourselves on at Claremont Men's College is having a balanced faculty, and I think it's been a wonderful thing. It's given our students a much better education. It's enabled us to get some very high-powered people. But I don't think most university administrators around the country probably would get very far if they should strive in this same direction. Especially in the big universities, the faculty choose their fellow faculty members. There are too few PhDs available in any case in most fields. This has been the situation since 1950. American academic system has been expanding rapidly. Number of PhDs has not expanded anywhere nearly so rapidly. Accordingly, the opportunity for many institutions to secure a balanced faculty would be slim. The last few years have been especially difficult. Actually, the shortage of faculty is beginning to be a little less marked, but the post-World War II PhDs who were exempted from the draft because they were teachers, because they were graduate students, and then because they were teachers, I think have included a few really unusually bad radicals who may be kind of overcompensating for their own lack of military service and hence urging their students on. I hope that more balance will come when the supply of faculty members begins to catch up with demand, which I believe is supposed to occur in the early 1970s. It also seems to me that academic administrators should be absolved from some of the disciplinary charges against them. People seem to feel the president can expel or suspend students freely. And I can remember myself 15 years ago, some of our students were starting a panty raid. Was panty raids 15 years ago or 25? I forgot. But at any rate, they were a mood of the moment at one time. And I just would simply say, if any boy, we didn't have any girls' dormitories raid, but there were girls' dorms in Scripps College across the street. And I say, if any boy forces his way into a Scripps dorm, we'll just throw him out of college. And the boys knew I meant it, and they didn't invade the dorms. And it was very simple. But this isn't true any longer. At least in California, our attorneys tell me that our state court decisions, which are following U.S. Supreme Court decisions, would require our going through what's called due process in any such case. Due process apparently means a faculty or faculty student or student tribunal. It may not be composed under our state court decisions it may not be done by an administrative tribunal. And this is a pretty serious limitation. This almost automatically transforms the college president from a judge into a politician, because he's got to be able to convince his faculty or students who make up this faculty-student tribunal that disciplinary action is necessary. And this is a real problem, because lots of faculty members have frequently had no administrative responsibility. They kind of got a little sort of natural-born opposition to the system, and you've got to convince them that disciplinary action is necessary. I've seen very much needed disciplinary action turned down by such tribunals in what you would think of as very high quality colleges. I think Alan Wallace was right last night in saying, I'm not sure whether he's right in his optimism about the campus disruption dying down, but he was entirely right, I think, in saying that as the faculties learn more about the nature of the problems and get more interested in them, that the disruption is going to be lower, because faculty have a very profound effect on students, and faculty-student tribunals are much more likely to take appropriate action. though the real problem is convincing the faculty. Now, this is, in a sense, this is not really disagreeing with John. It's kind of confirming, in a way, his statement that the administrator has a responsibility of leadership. And one of his responsibilities of leadership is to try to convince his faculty that law and order is an important thing to have on a college campus. But in my sort of defense of administrators, I should also mention the fact that while we've been having these troubles, that troubles with law enforcement are increasing generally. And as John himself pointed out, and while in the past we used to think of law enforcement as problems as coming largely from the poorer areas, there has always been some Gold Coast element. And our students from an affluent society are spoiled in a good many cases. And we've had two or three instances recently of invasions of the campus where we've referred the things to the law enforcement agencies and have been disappointed at their failure to function. One of the police officers commented to me one time, he said, you know, no judge in California is going to give a college-age student on a misdemeanor anything other than a suspended sentence. Well, it makes it fairly discouraging for the administrator. People say, why don't you bring in the police? You bring in the police, and you're in many ways worse off rather than better off. Now, in spite of my defense of my administrative brethren, I do think they could improve the performance of their colleges and universities considerably in some cases. And I would like to make some suggestions, and these, I think, in general coincide with John's. One or two are almost identical. My first suggestion is to the trustees, and I was very sorry I was not able to get here in time to hear their talks yesterday. I think trustees had better start looking for administrators with somewhat more steel in their backbones. Too often we've hired college presidents on the basis of how well they would get along with the faculty, deans of students on the basis of how well they would get along with their students. The Reisman Jenks book on the academic revolution admits at one point that, or states that trustees are tending more and more to be outer-directed rather than inner-directed. They are businessmen, but they've been looking for the kind of president who would get along with the faculty. Glenn Campbell may be an exception, but I think a number of trustees are going to have to stiffen their attitudes. I do think we need administrators with firmer qualities. Now, my suggestions to my fellow presidents. And the first one is that they should learn to lend their weight to values. And here I'm in complete accord with John Howard. The development of character and responsibility should be part of higher education. The president should state this in speeches, in administrative actions, in appointments to faculty, and in reappointments. We conservatives have not gotten ourselves altogether clear on the source of our values, and we differ between the natural rights people and those who figure rights in other connections. But whatever your source, I think that some sort of values is essential for our present predicament. In fact, Leo Strauss may be a good deal more important than Adam Smith in this connection. We have had some recent threats of disturbances in Claremont, and I've received far more offers of student support from both undergraduates and graduates in the interests of law and order from the Leo Straussians, both in Claremont Men's College and Claremont Graduate School, than I did from any other group of students. And I thought this was interesting. Now, it may be that the Strauss and Diamond and Jaffa have attracted the kind of students who are thinking that way, but I suspect there's somewhat more to it, that this emphasis on basic values is pretty important, and that it, in a way, underlies all political science and economics and sociological studies. Perhaps it is true, as somebody said yesterday, that the students don't like the education they're getting, in part because there is a feeling on their part that this isn't getting at all that life is about, and that basic values are a very important part of what life is about. And I do agree with John. I've seen far too many faculty members who feel that character, responsibility, ethics are not important at all. Their function is simply to pass on their knowledge of their particular field. And I think we have to take a broader view. Second, I'd say to my fellow presidents, even if you can't get balanced faculties, you could try to insert a few moderate or conservative professors into policymaking departments. Well, I understand that a very real part of the difficulty of San Francisco State, for example, is that several entire departments there were really left of center, not just the normal Democratic Party New Deal left of center of most faculty members, but really rabidly left. And they, of course, urged the students on. Well, if earlier presidents had quietly let the chairman know that appointments weren't going to be approved, or that the department ought to work around, get itself a somewhat broader outlook, and that it would help the department and the college to have some people on the other side of the fence, which after all, 60% at least of American college graduates after graduation belong, this might have been helpful. And maybe San Francisco State wouldn't have had the major difficulties it has had. I recently read in the Stanford arena, a little comparing analogy, they said here the Stanford faculty had voted against the military because they didn't think it appropriate to bring the military point of view into the faculty scene, but they voted for the blacks in order to bring the black point of view into the scene. Well, was this really very consistent? Weren't they saying we're let in the point of view that our emotions of the moment favor? And I think we do have to have more thoughtfulness on this score, and I do think administrators have a responsibility of working with their faculties. But as long as administrators are controlled in their actual disciplinary action by the faculties, I don't think you should expect too much of a new administrator starting off with a faculty like San Francisco State. In fact, I understand there are not large numbers of candidates to succeed Mr. Hayakawa as acting president there. Another suggestion to my fellow college and university presidents, obviously they should work harder on their choice of sub-administrators. As I've looked around, particularly in California, where I've known them in a number of institutions, I've been particularly disappointed at the way some of the deans and assistant deans have held up under the circumstances of the moment. All too frequently, a president who wanted some discipline found himself left almost entirely to himself. It's hard to get people to be deans of students. You're very fortunate if you get a dean of students who has some guts. And I think if we worked harder, we could be more likely to find them. Just as the trustees must learn to look for character and responsibility in the presidents, I think the presidents must look for them in these sub-administrators. And there, the president does have some real freedom of choice. Wherever possible, a fourth point, wherever possible, I think administrators should try to bring their trustees and other community leaders into contact with the faculty as well as with the students. And I agree with what John said about the students. I've always tried to view ours as a sort of a college family, a pretty big family with several thousand members. But if faculty know trustees, and if at least some students know trustees as you go along, at least each group learns that the other group doesn't bite, and they will, I think more responsibly together. I am really concerned, and this is a problem, I'm suggesting this is a problem and I don't know the answer, where does this tradition of academic freedom and complete protection of the faculty from the outside world, where does it lead us? It may, John has indicated in his comments, and I think there's some truth to this, it's perhaps led us into the situation in which campuses, which should be peaceful and orderly, are the opposite. It leads us at times with our large public institutions into an almost complete disregard of the public interest. I can give a couple of examples. I just gave a talk about our huge public higher educational system in California, which is by far the best supported in the world, and has far more money goes into it than any other place, and as you all know, has some extremely able faculty members, yet we seem to be graduating a proportion of students below the national average of the United States. Well, we're a pretty wealthy state, and I just wonder if this is right. And we are producing only about, with our this great university of ours, we're only producing about 20% of our own doctors from that university. And again, one wonders if it's right. And I think part, at least, of the problem has been that these highly independent, very well-protected faculties are making their choices as to what they want to do. And maybe that's really not what the legislature's putting up the money for. And I don't quite see the mechanism, but I think we've got to find some way to keep faculties somewhat more responsible to the world around them. My fifth point, granted that the legal powers for student discipline are limited, administrators should make a practice of using what powers they have. And there are a good many examples where this has not been done. There are some that I think are good. I think here in Chicago, I've been impressed with what the University of Chicago has done in the last couple of years. A very difficult situation in which they would find themselves potentially a great deal of difficulty, and they really have tried through suspensions and expulsions to keep things in order. And sharp contrast, I might say, to perhaps to Stanford out on the coast with us, or the Claremont colleges, which I do not think have had as good a disciplinary record as they should have. There are, of course, occasions. I'm not going to start criticizing a president immediately because he isn't using a particular power. He may have sized up the situation and said, look, I know I wouldn't get support from the faculty student tribunal or whatever body he has to go to. But so I don't jump to criticize as quickly as my friends in downtown Los Angeles do, but there are a number of occasions where people should have moved more firmly. In the long pull, however, my guess is that discipline is not going to be the major item in curing the present disruptions. My sixth point, administrators should learn to spend more time with students. It's an ill wind that blows no good. Perhaps the present disruptions may be helpful in teaching us to remember the presence of students on the campus. If you read that book about Columbia's difficulties, you were aware there that I think Columbia had abolished student government just two or three years prior to the disruptions, and apparently Grayson Kirk was in almost no kind of touch with students at all. And I think this is wrong. I mean, the students are why we're there. We ought to be paying attention to them. If this is correct, I think that cluster situations like ours in Claremont are going to become more important. It's been rather interesting to me. We run an average of perhaps a delegation a month that comes to Claremont to learn about the Claremont group plan. I confess that they aren't spread out through the year the same period of time. They tend to come rather more heavily from November to March when the weather's worst in the East and Midwest. But since the Berkeley riots of 1965, These delegations have tended to be from state universities much more. It was pretty obvious that they were all afraid it might happen to them with their large mechanisms, and they wanted to break these mechanisms down. So there's a possible good result that might come from this this situation. But perhaps I should summarize my comments by saying that I'm still puzzled. I don't think we've found the ideal organization for the academic world. I think this is obviously going to vary from place to place. Some institutions, great big universities, are obviously going to have different mechanisms from what colleges like Rockford and Claremont have. And there won't really be a fully standard pattern, but I think we could think things through, and I suspect that times like the present maybe means we're leading us to, as John suggested, a rather more fundamental analysis of what we're trying to do in education, what extent character and values do enter into this picture, and it may also be a time to help us convince our faculties that there is a real place for administrators, and that they themselves are going to be better off if they will learn to work with their administrators. Well, I apologize for the rambling nature of these remarks. As you can see, I'm much more interested in the discussion that will follow the remarks than I am in what I have to say myself. Thank you very much.